Hi, this is Jessica Murray, Managing Editor for Stairway to STEM, an online resource that supports autistic students transitioning to college, particularly in the STEM fields. This April, we decided to kick off the Steps to Autism Acceptance podcast. We wanted to give our editorial board members a chance to promote specific actions that people can take to build not just awareness, but greater acceptance for autistic students and students on the spectrum. What does it mean to really accept somebody as they are? Our editors and their guests are going to explore the steps we can take now to create a culture change. I want to introduce editorial board member Ariane Garcia. Ariane, thanks for being here and for leading this episode of the Steps to Autism Acceptance podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Listeners, have you ever had difficulty managing limitations or wanted insight into preventing and addressing shutdowns? Ariane is here to help us address this problem. Ariane, in addition to working as an editorial board member for STS, what's your day job and who's going to be your guest for this episode?
I work in healthcare. I also do work with the National Coalition of Disabled Latinx. I'm in the leadership team, and my guest today is Remington Sales, and he's an autistic college student.
Terrific. Thank you, Ariane. I'm really looking forward to listening to this episode.
Today, we're going to be talking about managing limitations and avoiding shutdowns, and shutdowns in general. So, Rem, what do autistic people normally experience during a shutdown?
If I were to put it simply, it's like everything in the world is just happening while you're like basically a vegetable. In a way, you get put into, you become a statue almost, even though there are a bunch of gears going on when inside your head.
Yeah, I completely relate to that. It happens to me like when I'm hungry, when I'm tired. How often do you experience shutdowns?
The only time I really experience it is in school, mainly school.
That's cool.
But it does happen like a few times. Like, I guess if you read an article that really hits you at your core, anything that will hit you at your core, but you can't really defend or refute, I guess.
Yeah.
Really just
like an emotional kind of hit you at your core, like some like an emotional response that gets you to not verbally articulate.
Yeah. Or even like something that you've held on to for like a certain belief that you might have had for a long time, and then you all of a sudden feel differently about it. You question if like you question your identity in fact at that point, like, did I really believe in this? I've believed in this so long, but this other thing's right, so am I?
And all the while that this is going on in your head, you're kind of just sitting there, and there's not really, like, a physical response.
Yeah, you just can't move. In the way, like, the brain just forgets its bodily functions.
That makes sense. So you said you experienced shutdowns at school. What do you do? What happens that you reach a shutdown at school? Like, what sort of things put you in the shutdown mode?
And mainly when I'm thinking about all the homework that I have to do, and really just in class, it's just wasted time, honestly, I feel. You're just listening to someone, yabber on, and yet they really just care about the work that you're doing, the homework, and you only care about the grades. That's a whole thing. And that's why I love online classes. They give you just the freedom. There's no middleman. There's no, like, you have to be here or we'll take off points for you. It's just, okay, here's your assignment. Here's what you gotta do. This is the time you gotta do it by.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I know exactly what you're coming from with that. I myself have experienced just shutdowns at school to the point where I just was like, oh, I can't do this. And then I tried online for a little while and I was having troubles with that. And I learned differently than traditional methods. When you experience these shutdowns, do they happen like during class or do they happen like during your breaks or like when do you kind of experience?
It's mainly during class, but just like if I'm on the campus, it hits me. Because when I'm not on the camp, when I'm not, like, at class or doing anything, I feel more, like, liberated. Like, I can do stuff. But it's also the fact that I have to do a commute to the school and from. I don't have a car, so I take the bus, which takes a long time in and of itself. What I hate is that idle time that I can't, like, it's not my idle time. It's just time that I'm forced to go through. And I feel like I could be doing something else. I could be doing this work, and just not being able to do it makes me shut down. It feels like I can't do anything. So that just resonates in my whole body.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I know exactly what you're talking about. I do drive and I do have a car, but I did feel that way when I used to have to take the bus. Like, it felt like wasted time and it would upset me. And then, like, on top of it, just sitting there, like, sometimes, like, the bus noises, the bus smells, the bus people, like, it would get to me, and it would upset me and set me off, like, put me, like, in a bad mood and set my day, like, in a negative direction sometimes. So I know what you're talking about with that. What do you do when you reach that point?
Really? I do, like, one of two things. One, I just kind of accept the shutdown and just sit there for a while and let myself sort of reboot. In a way, I feel like I'm rebooting. The other thing sometimes is I kind of embrace it in a way. I'm saying, like, hey, I got nothing to do right now, so I'm going to just... If I got my phone with me, I'll plug in my earbuds and I'll just browse YouTube. I'll say, like, okay, this is idle time. I'm going to use it as idle time. I'm going to surf the web. I'm going to see things. And if there's something, like, I've been thinking about before and haven't had, like, the time to do it, but now I can, like, just look at some random article online or define something, I use that.
So that kind of helps you, just kind of, like, vegging out and just, like, watching YouTube videos and, like, kind of puts you, like, in a different headspace, so you're not experiencing the shutdown negatively?
Yeah, it's kind of like using time. Your brain basically tries to use time against you, but what you have to do is use time with you. Mm-hmm. If you're in a situation that you can't really control, you kind of have to go with the current, and then you can start feeling that control back. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to use the current, because if you fight against it, it's just a losing battle.
How do you know whenever you're reaching your limits or your threshold, when you're about to shut down? Do you know, like, when that's about to happen to you?
Well, it's kind of weird that when it happens, it sort of happens in stages. It's almost like the grief process, or it follows that same pattern of the grief process. You don't know that you're in it. You deny that you're in it. And then it takes a second for you to realize that you're in it. Once you get to the point where you realize that you're in the shutdown, it's usually like it's prime. It's like you're just stopped. You're frozen and... It's sort of an out-of-body experience, if you will. You're sort of watching yourself just, like, there. You're kind of the passenger to this. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like in Inside Out, that movie, where all your emotions are there, but you're the one there. So you kind of have to, like, go around the console and fix things yourself.
Yeah.
Do it manually.
Oh, my gosh. I say that all the time. I'm like, oh, I'm doing this manually right now. When you're in class and you're kind of starting to shut down, do you leave class, like, to go to the bathroom to walk around, or do you do you have your computer with you?
Well, for college, which is a good thing, you can leave. It depends on the situation itself, kind of. If the teacher is, like, really cool and they'll let you leave, you can leave early and, you know, you can talk about it later. Mm-hmm. And you just explain your situation to the teacher, and if they understand, then everything's good, and you just, like, you say your sorries, you say, like, I'll do this, and life goes on. If it's a really bad teacher, well, they'll try everything in their power to make the situation worse. That's basically put it. They'll say, no, you can't leave. You have a responsibility to this class, and that just adds more and more.
Yeah, like more to it, like more pressure and, like, more feelings. Like I need to leave and I can't.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, like, even if you do leave, they'll say, like, well, then I'm going to have to count you absent for this, or you'll get a failing grade for the day. It's like, dude, I can't do... You want me to just sit here and be a rock, basically?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't I just be, like, disrupting things?
Yeah, like, I'd be more useful to you if you love me. Like, come back, like, next time with more, like, I'll have everything together. Yeah.
It's as Darwin said, in a way, be flexible, because then everyone wins. If you're not flexible, whether it be you or... I know the person in question has a problem. So really, it's more or less getting aid from the teacher himself. Mm-hmm. If you gotta leave, you gotta leave. There's no one or two way about it.
Yeah. Yeah. What other things exacerbate you?
In a way, I say the brain itself exacerbates you. I say with people, I firmly believe that there's a soul because there's a lot of things the brain does, mm-hmm. but you say you don't like. So the brain itself is like your internal enemy. It will do everything in its power to... It will say like, whoa, what about this homework that you have to... Can you even if you do eat it in time, will that be like a good grade? Mm-hmm. And you're constantly having to fight with yourself about this.
Yeah, like is it like forcing yourself to do your homework?
Yeah.
Forcing yourself to do the reading?
Yeah, and that's it's really a pain just having an enemy you can't get away from because it's literally a part of yourself. And you, in fact, in a way, you have to get someone now. Like what I did was I talked to my mom and I said, like, I'm getting a bit overwhelmed here. And she had really good thoughts. She said, like, first off, you have to categorize, like, your work itself. First off, put it in a line. Mm-hmm. And don't let your brain just throw the papers at you. You have to get it organized. And then you got to see, like, what needs the most attention, what doesn't need the most attention. And then what's, like, the easiest to get done, and then what's the hardest to get. Like, if you find a bunch of easy stuff to do and let you can get done, like, in a snap, do those first because... If you take away a bunch of pebbles, then the rock doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, in my head, I have, like for me, it's less like a line and more like a list. And so, like, I find that when I check things off of my mental list, it gives me, like, a little more... it takes a little bit of that burden off of like, pending... I guess the pending things that are just going on. And I'm able to concentrate more on the stuff that requires more mental energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have any like external stressors, like environmental, like is there like when you're in class, do you have any like sensory issues that sometimes distract you or kind of put you over the edge, like anything like that?
Well, I guess it's just, again, the brain making itself like trying to add more stress. Like I could be fine with a chair like any other day, but when I'm in this mood, it's like, oh, this chair is unbearable to sit on, man. This yeah. is horrible. Or like.
Like, I'm never going to sit in this chair again. I felt like that.
And more or less just the other students. One of the things I most hate is group work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hate group work. Yes.
It's not just so much as, like, the burns with everyone. It's the fact that I try to do stuff, but if it's not good with the group, they'll, mm-hmm. like, sort... They won't straight up take the paper away from me, but sort of like gradually mm-hmm. take over the thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'd rather, in fact, recently in one of my projects, I almost got a bad grade because the two people in my group didn't do anything.
Oh, yeah, that's a common thing that I hear about. Like for like some of my friends that are in college or my friends that went to college. It's yeah, like a lot of the group work, like half the group or most of the group won't do anything, and it's kind of like one person is stuck doing everything, and they all get the grade.
Yeah, and like, not only that, it's really just creatively. What's the word? Like, the opposite of stimulating? Repressive, that's it.
Oh, creatively repressive?
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
It's bad enough that you have to do the assignment, but if you can have a little bit of fun with it, like, why not do that? It makes it less of an assignment mm-hmm. and more of an art project.
Yeah.
And I try to do that, and then I just get like, oh, that won't get our point across or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, then, we should all do this by ourselves, then. Succeed or fail on your own time.
It's so, like, kind of, that kind of adds to it, too. It's like an either-or situation. Like, look, like, we can, like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's hard, like, to try and, like, get other people to be on board with the thing you're trying to say if they aren't open to understanding what you're trying to say. That is one of the things that I find most difficult. Is that something that you have issues with, like, in group projects?
Yeah, they just talking with them. And the thing is, there aren't like people that you're familiar with. It's strangers, and you're being forced to do this, mm-hmm. which is even bad. It's even bad just to force people to learn something. When you learn the best is when you want to. Like, say if you're building like a thing, like maybe a car, mm-hmm. and you're really bad with math, but you have to use the math to build the car, and you want to build the car, that's when you learn. You start learn, like, on your own time. You learn out of necessity.
You learn, like, the things you need to know to make the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels less like learning and more like, you know, you're like, going forward.
Like you're moving towards your goal of making a car.
Yeah. And, like, okay. At the end, you say, like, oh, hey.
Like, all of a sudden, I know all this math. Yeah. Okay. Do your professors know about your diagnosis?
Some, not all. In fact, it usually takes like half the semester.
Oh, before they get used to you or before they realize or before you open up?
Before like a shutdown will happen or something.
Mm.
Because honestly, if you do it at the beginning, they'll look at you differently anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll just make things a bit more difficult.
Oh.
So it should be more of an organic, like getting to know each other thing.
And then, like, later, once they're already used to you, like, you let them know, like, I'm autistic.
Yeah, because then they will have gotten to actually know you without looking at you through rose-colored glasses.
Mm-hmm. I've had that same thing. At my last job, I had a director. She didn't know I was autistic. I had myself just found out, like, a few months before she even got there. But, you know, I've always been autistic, so every time we would have conversations... she would tell me that she would tell me there was always some phrase that she would say at the end of the conversation that made me feel like it wasn't a typical conversation that she had with people. You know,
yeah.
She would say something like, your responses never cease to amaze me, or things along those lines, things that could be ambiguous, like amaze you like bad, amaze you like good. Like, what does that mean? You know?
Yeah.
And so it made me feel self-conscious a little. And so one day she gave me a book. It was called like What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And it was meant to be like a book to help like regular employees like shed the behaviors that keep them from being in leadership. I didn't know what she was trying to give me this book for, so I asked her. I was like, I'm autistic, and I don't know why you gave me this book. Can you just tell me so that I know what to look for here? As I was reading it, and I was like, these are all me. I was like, does she want me to shed my whole personality, or do I just need to tone it down a little? Like, I wanted to know what she wanted me to get out of reading the book. So I know what you mean by the process needs to be organic, and by the time that I told her that I was autistic, you know, for her it all made sense, and she was able to talk to me like different, she wasn't saying those things anymore, like those, like, you never cease to amaze me kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And it became more of a natural relationship between an employer and an employee. So I guess that kind of thing I can definitely see happening in a teacher-student relationship.
Yeah.
So the teachers that you do tell, like, how does it help you?
They usually get a bit more lax, give me a bit more...
Like wiggle room?
Yeah, they'll understand more. But, again, it depends on the person, kind of. Some will start viewing you as a problem. Others will actually start dealing with you better.
Mm.
It really just depends.
Yeah. Like on the teacher?
Yeah. I'm in a human sexuality course,
mm-hmm.
and the teacher's very new, very young, and she really understands about it. Like, the whole class is about sexual identity and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
which is in and of itself already psychological.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if she knows, like, I'm autistic, then she's like, oh, okay. And it's not a degrading thing, it's just mm-hmm. the fact that she now...
Understands in case you need to leave class, in case you need extra help, or in case something is, you know, something that requires her to give you more attention. It just helps you.
Yeah, and it's less fear, you know, the teacher, like, they don't know, they're afraid, like, one of the students is really bad. So if they act non-neurotypical, it obviously sets off people. But
yeah,
if you give them like the exact reason, mm-hmm. it'll be better.
It's but for calming.
But on the flip side of the coin, for more, like, old school teacher, which is, like, in my other class, they just will, like, they'll take it like a brick wall, basically.
Yeah, like, it's not an excuse sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then when you're having trouble they're the first ones to tell you, like, no, you need to be, like, at this level. What sorts of things help you manage your limitations? Like, when you wake up and you don't feel good, it's hard to make yourself, like, do all the things that you're supposed to mentally do in order to not shut down, in order to not melt down, in order to not be rude to people, in order to not, it just feels like so much extra. So what sorts of things do you do to help you manage, like, your limitations?
I usually get, like, reinforcements, as it sounds. Like, again, you're being...
Like people?
Or, well, things, objects, like...
Reinforcements, like...
Well, there's something simple, like the fidget spinner itself.
Oh, like, okay.
Like, you start filling...
Like, objects.
Like, there's a bunch of chaos happening. You need to fill it with stuff. Make it a bit orderly.
So, like, stimming?
Yeah, like...
What are your favorite stims?
Mainly video game. I even, like, create stuff. It's fun to create stuff. A lot of people don't like the quiet, the absolute quiet in just your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So instead, you do something like constructive and say, like, that reinforces the idea that you're still able to do stuff.
Oh, okay. I know what you mean. So, like, kind of like if you're feeling like, oh, I can't do something, creating something will help you, like, will help ease that tension of, like, I can do things, just right now I'm having an issue.
Yeah, even if it's something completely off topic, the fact that you did it, like, that's your achievement. Mm-hmm. And it feels good to get achievements, you know?
Yeah. So what were the biggest setbacks for you when you were transitioning from high school to college? Like, did you have an IEP program, or do you have anything like that you don't have in college anymore? Like, what was that like for you?
Well, it's just not a good process.
It just wasn't good.
Like... This could be in itself a whole nother podcast. Like, what's the biggest problem getting from high school to college?
Yeah.
And, like, well, I guess first off, the professors, you know, they aren't... It's not a salary thing. It's a whole new ballgame, basically.
Like, between you and your teachers?
Yeah, it's a public... It's more of a public place to be rather than a state-funded thing to be. It's less rigid and organized, and there's a...
So that, like, less organization, that less rigidity sometimes, like when it works for you, like getting to, like needing to leave class and you can, sometimes it also works against you.
Yeah. Okay. And there's less, like, people you can go to.
Oh,
since you're not real. Well, I want to say you're not forced to go here, but in the modern world, that's not true.
Yeah.
You're forced to go there. So since you already have to go there, but... They take away a lot of the, I guess you could say, perks of standard education.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a counselor, you don't have people you can make alliances with.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
The disability offices are kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, it's a bit better in community college, but in, like, regular college, you're on your own. There's also one other thing. When you're out of high school and there's no one else holding your hand, you have to choose. You start choosing. But you start choosing every single thing. Like, you're just thrown into the wild.
Oh.
It's like living in a castle, then all of a sudden the king says, okay, now you have to live in the forest and learn how to hunt your own food.
Oh, okay. So, like, everything just comes at you and it's all your decision and it's all your responsibility.
Yeah, there's no growing process.
Like, no way to ease into it.
Yeah, and no one, like, helps you. And for the life trainers that cost $1 million, not everyone has $1 million.
Yeah. What was the first thing that you did when you realized that it was just you?
In college?
Mm-hmm.
First, find shelter. You basically have to find a place that you feel good, whether that be the bathroom, the student center, or just some place like no one cares why you're there.
Like the library or something?
Yeah, some place that, like, a safe zone, if you will.
Okay.
And in fact, it could even be something mobile, like a phone. Just if you plug in your headphones, then you're good.
Oh, okay. Like something that will, like, allow you to have, like, a personal space.
Yeah, like, some people feel better in a... Going back to the analogy, it's better to feel in... Do you feel better sleeping in a tree or a cave kind of thing?
Yeah. Do you have any advice for teens that are transitioning from high school to college?
If I had to say, get your screaming done beforehand.
That's funny.
make sure you have a lot of contacts, because we sort of live in that nepotocratic world, mm-hmm. if you will, which stinks. I'd rather it be a meritocracy, but nepotism, as Squidward said, nepotism is alive and well.
Yeah.
And also, try not to freak out so much. Just take things one problem at a time.
Thank you so much for talking with us today. This is Remington Sales, and autistic college student. And thank you so much for being here.
Anytime.
This is Jessica Murray again. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Steps to Autism Acceptance podcast. For links, bios, and more information on this episode, plus additional resources for autistic students transitioning to college, visit stairwaytostem.org. Again, thanks for listening and keep tuning in.